From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. One of the most enduring memories of September 11th is the outpouring of support for public safety workers, firefighters and police, some who lost their lives responding to the collapse of the World Trade Center in New York City. La Crosse Fire Chief Greg Cleveland and Police Chief Ed Kondracki say some positive changes did come from that day, with more training and improved communication for area firefighters and police. I asked Chief Kondracki to talk about the impact September 11th had on the police department.
We were planning for Oktoberfest like we do every year, preparing to deal with the large crowds that we experience annually. Of course, along comes the Twin Tower incident, and within just 2 weeks, I believe, we now had Oktoberfest going in La Crosse. And I can tell you that the attitude and the demeanor of folks that were in the downtown area, they were just high-fiving officers in uniform as they went by, and they were extraordinarily polite to the officers. Our goal has always been to make as many friends as possible before tavern closing, because frankly, at around tavern closing, the crowds are at about maximum capacity. And in past years, they've been hesitant to leave. They're having such a great time that they kind of linger in the intersection of 3rd and Pearl, and at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, there'll literally be 3,000 people in that intersection. Well, immediately following the tragedy of the Twin Towers, that very first Oktoberfest, everybody left on their own. It was remarkable how well behaved. It was evident that people were very sobered, if you will, by the Twin Towers incident, and their respect for men and women who police the streets and perhaps a heightened respect or awareness was really, really evident.
Chief Cleveland, you were working at the Marshfield Fire Department at the time of 9/11. Can you talk about some of the immediate changes you saw there?
I remember coming from a department head meeting, walking into the fire station, and I saw the majority of people, firefighters on duties, were just kind of glued to what was going on the TV, and actually saw one of the towers come down. And I think it was that afternoon we actually had a number of citizens bring flowers up, and in Marshfield there was a sign on the front of the station that said Marshfield Fire and Rescue Department, and had the symbol there. And I think by 4 o'clock there were flowers heaped all over the ground in front of that sign. You know, I could tell by the faces on our firefighters that, you know, that they were thinking, you know, they're by the grace of God go I, and you know, they were thinking about what they would be doing at that point in time. But more importantly, I think that whole thing playing out on the television, as tragic as it was, I really thought that the people could put themselves in the place of those police officers and firefighters faced with the enormous challenge that they had that day.
Another thing that happened after 9/11 was the development of the Department of Homeland Security. And with that came millions of dollars in federal grants to departments across Wisconsin. Chief Kondracki, I'm wondering if you can talk about some of the money that came in after 9/11 for the La Crosse Police Department.
It was administered through the states, primarily through the County Emergency Management Office. And as a result, we were able to attend training sessions like we had never attended before. As an example, the Office of Homeland Security Training is located on a military base in Anniston, Alabama. And we were able to send a good number of officers there. I attended a week-long training there myself. And it is the kind of training that we'd never seen in policing before. And that is, we were able to, or were required to, enter a tank of containing live nerve gas. You had to put on the protective gear. You were required to take a blood test before you went in and a blood test after you went in just to make sure that you weren't contaminated. And then in that tank, you were required to perform various functions, including performing first aid and conducting triage at various mock disaster scenes. And we just never had that level of training. And out of all of this came a real emphasis on NIMS, which is an acronym for the National Incident Management System, which I think has caused police and fire to work more closely together than ever before. You know, I mean, we've always been seen as two peas in a pod, you know, primarily because we're public safety and we wear uniforms. But this National Incident Management System allowed us to train together and doing various laptop and hands-on type of training, learning how to set up a command post, an emergency operations center, learning about the logistics and planning and all that that go with a major incident. And just even most recently, that training has benefited us all along. I remember meeting Chief Cleveland at the tornado site,
this year?
2 months ago, yeah. And you could see all this NIMS training kick in and the communications that came out of it. You know, if we learned one thing on 9/11, it was that our communications ability was not what it should be. And we've looked at radio interoperability so that various agencies locally and in the state are able to communicate with one another. So it's a whole different kind of training. We've got four officers now trained in threat liaison. And what they do is they communicate on a regular basis with state officials and receive a constant update and intelligence information as it pertains to any future terrorist attacks. You know, and all of this is just a heightened level of awareness that I don't think will ever go away.
And Chief Cleveland, you came into La Crosse in 2006. So can you talk about some of the programs that were already in place and then some that you helped see through?
One of the biggest things was, as Chief Kondracki said, was the radio interoperability. That was already put into place, and that was followed up by some equipment that, you know, the fire department got through Homeland Security, then to bridge the gap between us and, for example, the Sheriff's Department, the State Patrol, so that we could develop interoperability between UHF and VHF frequencies. So that came through. The intelligence briefings, as Chief Kondracki talked about, you know, the fire departments were rolled out and included in this daily intelligence briefing. And we have a person who's delegated within the fire department who is a threat liaison officer now that gets constant communications update, not only on terrorist activities, whether it's international, but also domestic, things that are going on from gang-related issues to potential civil unrest. And one of the things I think that has really contributed to that is that the fire department is out in the community every single day. We see what's going on in the community. We're in businesses and apartment houses on emergency medical calls, on fire calls. We're traveling back and forth. And we're really kind of part of that community. And I think that's what has really opened up the eyes of, for example, agencies like the Department of Justice, that that they've included us, because I think that they, not that we're investigators or detectives, but we do see a lot of things that go on in the community, and we can provide valuable pieces of information that may be key missing pieces that put together a story that will hopefully prevent another incident, no matter how serious or how small, from happening again. So I think communications, I think the intelligence, including the fire department in sensitive intelligence, sharing to better prepare us, and again, the inclusion of the incident management system all the way around are probably the top three that has happened, and then followed by the equipment grants that followed shortly thereafter.
Can you talk about some of the training that your firefighters received? I think it was the Structural Collapse Heavy Rescue Regional Team.
Right. Many of our La Crosse firefighters are part of the state's Urban Search and Rescue Team. In fact, we have probably four or five of our firefighters and officers who are leadership roles in that. And again, they go over to Volk Field, where we have an engineered collapse. It's an engineered actual rubble pile with buildings and vehicles where they have to go through and actually cut holes through concrete, much that you would see in a building collapse, such as the Twin Towers that you saw in Oklahoma City. It's been very, very well recreated, and our people go over and practice on that. And being only 40 miles away, we're very fortunate. We've gotten very specialized equipment in the event of a collapse. We know that the firefighters are going to be first responders. They're going to be the first people, one of the first people on the scene. And again, there's this expectation that, you know, that we're going to take some immediate action. So again, we've got listening devices, we've got cameras, we've got specialized trainings in identifying collapse and how to shore and stabilize buildings and structures that we utilized during the tornado. A lot of these buildings were damaged and were needed to be stabilized, and our people had the training, they had the experience, and they also had the equipment to go in and make a difference in the lives of our citizens. So those. Great example of how Homeland Security dollars flow all the way down, and although it's not a a terrorist incident, but it's something that represented a tremendous danger to our residents, and we were able to go in and make things better for people, and that's basically our job.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio and La Crosse. My guests today are La Crosse Fire Chief Greg Cleveland and La Crosse Police Chief Ed Kondracki. We're talking about changes to local law enforcement after September 11th.
And a lot of money from a lot of these federal programs through the Department of Homeland Security is dwindling. Right. You can talk about the drug program and maybe some other programs that are being affected through the police department.
One thing that has really come out of all this is even closer partnerships with other federal law enforcement agencies. We have regular meetings with the local FBI agents, and we have a tremendous relationship with the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. As a matter of fact, that relationship led to us getting a bomb dog. All in all, you know, I think what's happened is a need for us all to pull together. And in law enforcement and in public safety, police and fire are working so closely together. You know, I'm reminded of the president at the time. Was given the badge of a New York Transit Authority police officer who was killed in the line of duty. He was presented that badge by the officer's parents, and he held it up and said that he would carry that badge in his pocket as a constant reminder of the lives that ended and the challenge that does not end. And I think that is the challenge of the future, is that we don't forget that what happened 10 years ago and that threat is very much alive and a real and present danger to all of us.
Will addressing that threat be more difficult with a lack of funding from the federal government coming in?
Funding is always nice, but it's not all contingent on funding. I think the new partnerships, I think the National Incident Management System, the interoperability of communications that you heard Greg talk about, that these are going to be ongoing. And additional Homeland Security funding would be nice. However, the monies we have received have advanced us considerably, you know, and I think that we are positioned to continue to deal with this threat.
And Chief Cleveland, you were recently featured in a story from the Wisconsin Center for Investigative Journalism about funding cuts from the Department of Homeland Security. Mm-hmm. And in that, you said that there could be threats to community safety. I'm wondering if you could talk about that.
One of the things that they learned about immediately after 9/11 was the fact that I remember being up in Marshfield and speaking to federal authorities. One of the things they were concerned about, for example, were the number of crop dusters and the ability of crop dusters to overfly populated events or populated cities and to be able to disperse poisonous or very harmful chemicals. And one of the things that, you know, that they wanted to know is what was our capability in terms of having a self-contained breathing apparatus that was resistant to that. And at the time, our protective clothing was totally inadequate. And, you know, translating that to La Crosse is that, you know, now that we have our self-contained breathing apparatus now today are certified for chemical, radiological, nuclear, explosive, incendiary situations. You know, that certification, it's a much higher level of respiratory protection for our people that would allow us to go into obviously not the most severe poisonous atmospheres, but some atmospheres where we could do some immediate rescues and take some action. So that, you know, that was all purchased through Homeland Security dollars. And I can tell you that the expense related to that equipment in terms of the liability, malpractice, if you want to say, made that equipment extremely expensive for the manufacturers. And we were fortunate to equip all of our units and most of our personnel with this type of gear, protective clothing, in the event that, you know, we had a very bad chemical situation within the city. So that was one of the greatest benefits that we saw from the Homeland Security. We most recently got some training software and about a half dozen laptops that allowed us to put our commanders in very, very critical situations that we could reproduce graphically on computer screens and allow inputs that would either make the situation better or worse. And again, getting back to, you know, the Homeland Security aspect immediately after 9/11, the first thing is that, you know, we responded to hazmat situations. We go to collapse situations. We go to emergency medical calls. We go to fires. And there was this really broadening, this broad sense that the fire departments were expected to help out and be partners with other agencies. So therefore, you know, we've really made the transition from working kind of ourselves at the scene through NIMS with our police agencies and partners to this all hazards approach. And that, I think, is what the federal government has realized, is that the fire service is almost like the domestic army along with our comrades in the police department. So therefore, you know, a lot of these programs were aimed at the urban search and rescue, the advances we've made in our hazardous materials response team in terms of equipment and training has been incredible. And all of those changes have come to La Crosse through federal Homeland Security dollars and allowed us to serve our citizens and to be those partners with other both local, federal, state agencies to make the system better.
So is it a matter of both of your departments have gotten used to receiving this federal money over the last decade, or is it truly needed to keep coming in?
I think what we have to do is we have to build on the partnerships that already exist and that have been enhanced because of the monies that did come in. So they're going to have a lasting effect. And, yeah, it would be nice to have more money, more equipment. But I think that we are now better positioned than ever before to work with one another and to deal with another major situation that might eventually present itself. So, you know, I'm not as concerned about the funding as I am impressed by the relationships between the police and fire and other law enforcement and federal partners that have come out of all this.
Chief Cleveland?
I would agree with 90% of what Chief Kondracki said, because, again, the partnerships and the people working together are, if you have that, almost anything can be overcome. But the fire service is a little bit different in the fact that, you know, the equipment that we have and that we need to do our jobs, whether it's a chemical ID unit that can identify everything from anthrax powder to Ajax cleaning stuff, that's very expensive. And, you know, those are the types of tools that you know, if we're going to make that difference in the first 72 hours of an incident, much like having the protective clothing, the coats, the pants, the respiratory equipment we wear, the hazardous materials suits that we have, the extended breathing air systems, those are extremely expensive. And that's where the process has to be made. Do we purchase that locally? Or do we have to, you know, can we have the opportunity to join a bigger regional team like we have with our USAR team, our Urban Search and Rescue team, and then be able to use a Homeland Security grant to benefit more people? So the equipment that we have is very expensive, and obviously it gets to be maintained. But we've offset through some of that our radiological team. We have a radiological team that is equipped to respond to radiological incidents, whether it be a nuclear power plant or, for example, a dirty bomb. And we've been able to partner and use those relationships, and the state provides us the equipment, maintains the equipment at no cost to us. So, you know, again, that just shows you the value of relationships that have been forged, and the big idea of working together, we can accomplish more. And I think, you know, that's where the things that we've talked about before, that payoff. But there is, I think, going to be some ramifications to fire departments with regard to decreased funding and equipment.
Is the La Crosse area a safer place a decade after 9/11?
I think it is, primarily for the things we've said here this morning. That is, we are better prepared, better trained. We do have additional equipment, and as does the police department. We, with our regional policing efforts in conjunction with the various sheriff's departments, the Bearcat is a perfect example of a piece of police equipment that we didn't have before.
Which did come under scrutiny when it was
first
introduced
sure.
in the community.
So many of these things, though, people laughed at the Bearcat. Milwaukee received several Bearcats, and people laughed, why would the police need something like that? And then suddenly they were deployed a half a dozen times in a short period of time, and everybody said, hallelujah, this is good equipment, and where would we have been without it? But all that hadn't been said. I think we are safer than before. We're certainly more vigilant, more aware, more prepared. But we can never forget the lessons of 10 years ago, and I think that's going to shape the future for public safety.
I do, as we, you know, we talked a little bit before, but to me, you know, the decade following 9/11 has been a decade of difference, and I really believe that, you know, the fire service has made leaps in bounds in terms of reaching out and working with the community, working with other state, federal, and local ordnance enforcement agencies, and it has really become more part of the greater goal of community protection, and I know that with the equipment, with the training, I saw a difference on the day of the tornado. And again, as Chief Kondracki went, the communications, the centralized command that was put together, three area commands that were put together, the deployment of our urban search and rescue team with the equipment, with the proper equipment and training. So to me, it truly has been a decade of difference, and I think that's translated directly to the citizens here of La Crosse. And I think we're a much safer community than we were 10 years ago.
Greg Cleveland is the chief of the La Crosse Fire Department. He was joined by La Crosse Police Chief Ed Kondracki to share their thoughts about September 11th and what has changed for public safety workers in the last decade. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Our production team includes Steve Roysom, Mary Mian Strube, John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. In addition to Newsmakers, you'll find archived reports and special series produced by the La Crosse News Bureau, as well as network news from Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR. And if you'd like to comment on this week's Newsmakers or have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse.